Morning. Today's daf in Avodah Zarah is Mem Aleph. We just have a little bit to finish up from yesterday's daf in the Perek, in the second Perek. So let's just quickly wrap up the Gemara from yesterday. We are on Mem Amud Beis, and we are discussing those things that are produced by a non-Jew and would be mutter, mutter bahana, mutter ba'achila. The Mishnah on Lamed Tes Amud Beis goes through a list of things which, even though they're produced by a non-Jew, but they're simply nothing to be concerned about. There's no gzera de rabbanim chasnus. There's no tam isser. There's no taste of isser in it, and so therefore there's just simply nothing left to be concerned with. And for these things, it would be mutter lagamri. It would be totally permissible to gain benefit from those things. The Mishnah started off with talking about milk, where the milking was done by a non-Jew, but it was supervised by a Jew. And the Mishnah went on to list a number of other things as well, which would be okay. And as we go through the Gemara. The Gemara is going to just give us a short analysis of the things mentioned in the Mishnah. We are up to Ale Shochiltus. We're talking about now the leaf of the Chiltus. The Chiltus vegetable is a very sharp vegetable. I mentioned last time we talked about the Chiltus vegetable. It would be a wonderful thing if I knew what it was. It would be. I'm sure it would be. But it's a really sharp vegetable. I do know from the Rashi and the Tosfos that we did earlier that it's sharper than an onion. It's sharper than a radish. It's an extraordinarily sharp vegetable, and when you cut this vegetable, so there now are two minor heat components: one, the friction of the knife as the knife is cutting through it, and two, the fact that it's very sharp. And so when you take these two together, so what you get is you get a full blia, you get a full absorption of taste from the knife into the vegetable. So if the knife is not kosher, the vegetable is not kosher as well. So this is the Chiltus vegetable. Tosfos, if you remember, just a couple days ago, so he equivocated a little bit when it comes to like onions and radishes, which are sharp. You know, maybe Tosfos is, you know, speculating, but maybe a little bit less sharp than that of a Chiltus. And would the same thing happen in an onion and a radish? Tosfos equivocates, but there is an opinion in Tosfos that it would be the same result. So if I cut a radish or if I cut an onion using a knife, so if it's a treif knife, so then the onion rash would be treif. And if it's a fleishik knife, the onion would be fleishik. And if it's a milchik knife, the onion would be milchik, etc., etc. So but now we're not talking about the actual vegetable. We're talking about the leaf of the vegetable, the alei shochiltus. So when you're cutting the leaf of the vegetable, so the leaf is not sharp. And therefore, if you have a guy and he's cutting up the leaf, so that's fine. So the Gemara says pshita. So the Gemara says, okay, but I think that's obvious, meaning it's just a leaf. It's not the actual vegetable itself. The Gemara says, yeah, but pieces of the actual vegetable might get in there as well. So the Gemara says, so now I might thought that maybe some of the pieces of the vegetable might get mixed in. So the Gemara says that really what happened is that they fell off the pieces of the leaf fell into the kli. And if there are any pieces of vegetables, probably it's not gonna linger in there. It'll probably slip away. So in other words, if we're focusing more on the leaf than on the vegetable, so the Gemara says that would be fine. The Mishnah talks about now the olives, round and soft. So the Gemara says, now if they're selling olives, what would be the problem? Meaning we're talking about just olives. In other words, olive oil. So as we know, there was once upon a time a gzera on the olive oil, and the ban was lifted. The ban was lifted by Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, which the Gemara actually discussed extensively. But we're just talking now about the olive, the fruit itself, the olive. So the Gemara says, what's the problem? So the Gemara says, Rafi Tuv, it's really soft. So the Gemara says, so once the olive gets really soft, so maybe what the guy does is he sprinkles a little bit of wine on it. Maybe as it softens, it needs a little bit of wine. Perhaps as a preservative, perhaps to sweeten the taste, whatever the case is. But the Gemara says that's a havamina that it would have been a concern. So the Gemara says kamashvlan hani machmas mishchahu derafu. So the Gemara says no, its softness is not really a function of the wine. Its softness is just simply because it's an olive, and an olive when pressed up together, so it has some oil coming out of it, and it's the oil of the olive that's softening the fruit. It's not any other liquid. Rav Yossi amar shlachin asurin. Rav Yossi says once it gets to the point of shlachin, it's going to be asur, meaning we're still talking about the olive. So heichidam shlachin am Rav Yossi b'Rabbi Chanina kosha ochsa biyado v'garino nishmetas. Shlachin means, you know how soft it is? You're holding the olive in your hand. And it's so soft that basically the pit falls right out as you're holding the olive in your hand. So you get to that point, so according to Rav Yossi, it's going to be Aser. Rav Yossi is of the opinion that once it gets to this kind of level of softness, so for sure they sprinkled some wine on top of it, and therefore it's going to be Aser. Chagavim abayim tan rabban, the Gemara quotes a braisa. It's a tosefta. Chagavim v'akafrisin, v'akaplutos abayim mina otza, mina heptik, mina sfina mutarin. So if you're buying any of these products from, or I should say, off out of a warehouse, out of some sort of cellar, out of the boat, so under these circumstances, it would be mutter. Meaning, these are our organic products. These are natural products. You're buying it from a guy, that's fine. Totally fine. But nimkarim bikat luza, lifnechen vani, asurim imnechem azalf yaim alayin. However, when you're buying it from the market, so the salesman is interested in making it look presentable. So what it does is it's got like a little, he's got his little spritzer bottle. Okay, I know I'm modernizing it a little bit, but he's got that little spritzer bottle, it's got some wine in it, and he spritzes it with some wine, and somehow the wine, again, gives it some sort of nice look to it, it gives it a sheen, it maybe it hydrates it, whatever the case is, so he's sprinkling wine on it, so therefore you can't buy it from him at that point in time. So again, so the idea is that when you're buying it at an early stage, so your warehouse, off the boat, it's fine, it's perfect, it's just the original product, it's not, there was no additives, but once you get to a place where you have to be concerned about additives, so generally they added wine. Alright, so apple cider, basically. So, so again, if you're buying it from the factory, it's fine, it's apple cider, it's just, it's apples and whatever, they let it ferment a little bit, it's apple cider, it's fine. However, once you get to a place in its sale where now you have to be worried about additives, so then you have to be worried about additives. And typically the additive was wine. Tan Rabban Pamachas Chash Rebbe Bemeya. One time Rebbe had some sort of issues with his stomach. The Gemara, by the way, I'm just cataloging in my head the numbers of stories of Rebbe where he got sick. Meaning, Rebbe, you know, he had, unfortunately, he dealt with a lot of illnesses in his lifetime. So so one time he had some sort of stomach ailment. So Amar Klum Yeshadim Shirdei Yain Tupuchim Shalvdi Kochavim Asar or Mutar. So now he's asking the question: apple cider. Apparently, apple cider would be very good for his stomach. It would calm his stomach down. But obviously he needs to know whether or not it's something which is mutar asar. Obviously, this kind of ailment that he was suffering from is not life threatening. Otherwise, obviously he'd be allowed to consume it. But in other words, is it mutar? Is it asar? Amar Lafanav Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yosef Amachas Chash Abba. So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi tells Rabbi, look, one time my father was sick. So they brought him apple cider, fermented for 70 years. So you talk about nice aged apple cider, shots of an isrape, and he drank it, and it was wonderful. So Rabbi was upset with Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. You knew this information for so long, you withheld this information from me, like you need to tell me these things. So Batku Matsovikucha Mechash Ayelo Shosh Meos Garvi Yain Shul Tapuchim Shul Ayin Shana. So he did a little bit of research. He Googled it. He found one guy who had a storehouse of the apple cider, 70-year age, vintage apple cider, Vishasavan Ezrape. And he drank it and boy did he feel good. Amar Baruch Hamakum Shemasa Olam Lashomrim, Makarish Baruch, he gave the world over to Shomrim, meaning people who watch and guard. Meaning, who's going to be watching something for 70 years? That's a long time to watch anything. Okay, good. Hashem, thank you for the shomer. Thank you for the guardsmen. I feel a lot better now. V'chein l'truma. And then the Mishnah ended off with two words which just contextually doesn't fit so well in the Mishnah. Meaning, the Mishnah listed off a number of things that would be mutter. And then the Mishnah says, and the same thing is true regarding truma. What is true regarding truma? Which aspect of the Mishnah is the Gemara talking about? So, let's see. Final loose end of the Mishnah that we need to tie up. V'chein l'truma, mai v'chein l'truma, amar av sheshes, v'chein l'kohen achashod, limkor truma, l'shem chulin. So, the same thing is true regarding a kohen, who unfortunately is suspected of selling truma, and he's selling it over, and he's passing it off as chulin. Now remember, truma on the open market, it does not fetch well. First of all, who are your buyers for truma? So they're only kohanim. Right, a kohen is going to be buying the truma. Whoa, what do you mean buying the truma? Why would he buy truma when he can get it for free? That's exactly what the issue is. Meaning that if there's a secondhand market for truma, whoever's selling the truma is not going to be fetching a lot of money for it. Meaning, once a Kohen gets truma in his hands, so he should be eating it, but he could sell it. But how much is he going to fetch for that truma? That's exactly the point. He's not going to fetch a lot of money for it. Because what Kohanim are going to buy it from him when, in fact, they can get it for free? So obviously, if a Kohen is ever in a position where he's going to be selling truma, it's going to be at a deep discount. And parenthetically, by the way, the Gemara constructs this scenario a number of times. You can have a Yisrael owning truma. Let's say, for example, you inherit truma from your maternal grandfather. Right, so you can't eat it, but it's yours. In other words, it's your truma. You inherited it from your maternal grandfather, who was a Kohen. So again, so what you'll do is you'll sell it. But again, the idea is that you're not going to be fetching a lot of money for it. So here now, unfortunately, this Kohen, so what he does is basically he's got a little store in the back of his house, and he's selling truma, but he's telling everyone it's chulin, so that he can make more money. Okay, so it's obviously he's violating lifnei iver. What he's doing is it's immoral, it's illegal, it's, you know, yeah, and it might be asur as well, and lifnei iver. But that's what he does. So lefanavu da'asur v'abay minot, min heptik min asula mutar. So the Gemara says, so if he's selling it from, let's say, his home, so at that point in time, once he's gained this bad reputation, you can't buy from him at all. However, if we're talking about from the storehouse, from the warehouse, so it would be permissible. Because at this point in time, if it's discovered that for already from the warehouse, from the storehouse, he's selling it, and the Chachamim discover that what he's selling is truma, so what the Chachamim are going to do is they're going to confiscate it from him. The Rashi at the very end says, Yafkirus kol otsar. They're going to declare his otsar to be ownerless. The Chachamim have that kind of power and ability. And so therefore, since there is some...
But isn't it maintain his status as a truma? So if you got a hemorrhage, you have people going to eat it. No?
Yeah, in other words, but what the Chachamim would do is disavow him from it. But you're right. It would still, of course, still have retained its status. But the Gemara says, because of that fear, so that'll keep him in check. Just like the Mishnah described earlier, that as long as there is some sort of fear and concern that keeps the person in check, same thing is true over here. That kind of fear will keep that unscrupulous Kohen in check. Hadron al-Chaim Ha'amidim, that is the end of the second parak of the Masechta. And here we begin this morning with the third parak of Avodah Zarah. I mentioned yesterday, here we begin Avodah Zarah, meaning not obviously as a Masechta. We are now 40 blot into the Masechta. We are finished now two parakim, but really what we've been discussing is the periphery. We've been discussing a lot of the Gzeres, the Rabbanan, that surround Avodah Zarah, but we haven't really talked about Avodah Zarah itself, in of itself. Okay, so this parak now really represents the beginning of the discussion of actual Avodah Zarah. So as I mentioned yesterday, so of the Masechta, 75 blot of the Masechta, so in terms of Dapim, more than half of it is really skirting around the issue. In other words, dealing with the periphery, the Isurei Derabbanan. Now with this parak, we're going to be discussing the actual Avodah Zarah itself. When we're talking about Avodah Zarah itself, really we can break it down into three categories. We can talk about Mamash, the Avodah Zarah itself, meaning that which was worshipped as a deity. We can be discussing Takrovis Avodah Zarah, anything that is offered to the Avodah Zarah as a sacrifice. And we could be talking about tashmishei avodah zarah, things that are used in aid of the actual service itself, right? Things that help you, the bowls, the, you know, like lahavdil obviously, but like the kelim and the beis hamikdash, things that help and aid. So there are really three categories of avodah zarah gufa, takrovis avodah zarah, tashmishei avodah zarah. We are going to be talking today in the beginning of the third parak about the actual avodah zarah itself. What do we know regarding avodah zarah itself? So it's also bahana. You're not allowed to get benefit from it. So the Torah says, "Lo yidbak biyadcha meuma min acherim," that there can be nothing of the cherim. Cherim here means the actual avodah zarah itself. That nothing of it can be in your hand, meaning that you're not allowed to get any benefit from the avodah zarah. Okay, when something is an avodah zarah, let's say you construct an idol and to make it into a deity, and it's worshipped as a deity. So does it remain an avodah zarah forever? So again, just the basic idea that we need to know going into this parak is it depends who the owner of it is. If the owner of the Avodah Zarah is a guy, so now there's an opportunity for bittul. In other words, what the owner of the Avodah Zarah, if he's a guy, can do is he can be mevatel. He can basically say, look, at one point in time, I thought this had some sort of power. I thought it could help me. I now realize that this is stupid and the idol is stupid. And he's mevatel the Avodah Zarah. Exactly how he's mevatel the Avodah Zarah? We'll talk a little bit throughout this parak. Does he have to break a piece of it off? Is it enough if he just simply articulates, I don't believe in this anymore? But at least there's an opportunity, there's a ability of bittul avodah zarah. Once the avodah zarah is owned by a Jew, it's no longer eligible for bittul. Meaning an avodah zarah owned by a Jew, that's it, it's avodah zarah forever. What do you have to do with it once it's in the hands, once it's owned by a Jew? You have to destroy it. And destruction of it basically is you reduce it down to particles, right? Gemara, we're doing the Gemara in Sukkah in the afternoons, right? Ketutei mechla shirei. Meaning you have to destroy, totally destroy it. If it's once it's owned by a Jew, bittul is no longer an option. Okay. So, so just as two basic introductory points to this Mishnah, one is that we're not talking about avodah zarah mamish, we're talking about the actual idol that was made for the purposes of service of avodah zarah. And two is that there is at least a possibility of bittul, but only when owned by a non-Jew. But when owned by a Jew, there's no longer a possibility of bittul. Okay, those are the two ideas that you need to know. And let's begin the Mishnah. Let's begin the third parak of the Masechta. Kol Tzlamim. So here we're talking about a tzlam. We're talking about an idol. Now we are talking about discovering the idol, not knowing its history. Was it worshipped or was it not worshipped? So we don't know. So Kol Tzlamim Asurim Neshem Nevanim Pamachas B'Shana Divrei Rav Meir. So Rav Meir says, look, it's an idol. It was worshipped. Rav Meir talks about that in his community it used to be the minhag, where they used to have basically an idol for every day of the year. So an idol for every day of the year, and that idol was worshipped on that particular day. So since that's true in his community, so you pick up you discover an idol in town, so the chances are, it's a good chance also, that it was worshipped. So basically, you don't know the history, but according to Rav Meir, but you can guess. And to guess correctly, you probably would say that it wasn't a avodah zarah. And so since that's the conclusion, since that would be a reasonable conclusion, according to Rav Meir, you find the tzelem, was it worshipped? Yes. Was it mevutal? Maybe. Could be, but in other words, but since the starting point is that it was probably worshipped, so therefore, according to Rav Meir, it therefore is going to be aser. I cannot get benefit from it. It's a suffix. And the Chachamim say, look, you find an idol in of itself, that is not enough of indication that was worshipped. Idols were made all the time to honor great people, right? You go to any park and you're going to find that a statue is made to honor particular people. So just because you find a statue of and right an image of somebody, that doesn't mean it's an idol. So according to the Chachamim, the way that you're going to forensically know that something was an idol is it's got to look like it was worshipped. What is it? What clues are there that look like it was worshipped? So basically what this idol must have is it must be holding something in its hand. The Mishnah over here gives a number of examples of what it's going to be holding in its hand. So, Eino Aser Elokosh Yishbiado Makelot Sipor Kador. It's going to be holding either a stick or bird or a sphere. Stay tuned, we're going to be discussing in the Gemara the significance of these items that the idols are holding. So according to the Chachem, that means to say that just finding a tzelem in of itself, finding an idol, so at this point in time, I'm not going to say that it for sure was worshipped, I don't know. And the chances are that it was not worshipped. Now, we're going to talk more about what sfeikos there are to take into consideration. Stay tuned, we're going to be discussing that. But in the meantime, I simply don't know. Only when there is real concrete proof that it was worshipped, like it was holding something in its hand, then and only then am I going to say that it was worshipped, and therefore it's going to be aser ba'ano. And finally, the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, Amar Af Kol Sheish Biyado Kol Davar. Shimon Gamliel basically accepts the Chachamim, but is slightly more machmir. According to Shimon Gamliel, it doesn't have to be holding anything specific, as long as it's holding something, that is going to make it an avodah zarah. Then we can say retroactively that it was probably worshipped, and therefore it's going to be aser ba'ano. But if it was holding nothing, so then Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is going to agree with the Chachamim. We're not going to assume that it was worshipped, and therefore it is not going to be aser ba'ano. Now, where the Gemara starts off with is if you read the Mishnah just with a simple flow. Here's how the Mishnah comes off sounding. I'm going to do the Mishnah one more time, but I'm just going to read it as just one sentence. The first two opinions, Rav Meir and the Chachamim. So I'm going to go back and just read the Mishnah again. Called Tzlamim Asurim in Mishnah Nevanim Pamachas B'Shana Divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says that when you have an idol, it's going to be aser because it was worshipped once a year. And V'Chachamim Amar Mimeinu Aser Ela Kol Sheish Biyado Makelot Tzipor O Kador. And the Chachamim say no, only if it was holding something in its hand. It sounds like from the Mishnah that what the Chachamim are basically saying is, I knew it was worship one time a year, but that's not enough. In other words, what it must be is, it must be holding something in its hand. And if you're reading the Mishnah the way I just presented it, you're bothered by the obvious question. If it was worshipped, it was worshipped. Meaning, what difference does it make whether it's holding or not holding something in its hand? Meaning, all you need for something to be Avodah Zarah is to be worshipped one time, and now it's Avodah Zarah. So now the Chachamim are saying, oh no, it's got to hold something in its hand. What do you mean? If it was worshipped, so then I don't care whether it is or it wasn't holding something in its hand. And that's exactly what bothers the Gemara.
You don't know.
Well, I know. I understand that, but when you're reading the Mishnah the way I just read it, it sounds like the Chachamim are responding to Rav Meir. And the Gemara, and that's what the Gemara is asking. So if it was worshipped one time a year, so I don't understand the Chachamim. So I'm Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef, I'm Rav Yochanan, Kamashur Rav Meir, Ayu Ovdim Osob HaMachas B'Shana. So the Gemara says, look, here's what Rav Meir is saying. In other words, it's probably the way you originally understood Rav Meir, but the Gemara now is just fleshing it out. Here's what Rav Meir is saying, is that in the community of Rav Meir, this was the minhag. You had a tzelem a day for every day of the year. And so, and every tzelem was worshipped one time a year. And now for Rav Meir, now that he's used to this kind of idol worship, where it wasn't that this idol was worshipped with any kind of regularity, one day a year. What about the next day? What about the day after that? Another tzelem. So for Rav Meir now, you have this possibility where you have a tzelem constructed, even for one-time usage, once-a-year usage. Now you move to a community that doesn't follow that minhag. Rav Meir says, look, as long as I now know that this is a possibility, so therefore I'm going to look at every single tzelem, whether it's holding something, whether it's not holding something, and I'm going to assume that it was worship. And what do you want to tell me? It's improbable? So Rav Meir's choshesh lemiuta. We know throughout Shas, Rav Meir says, even if something is unlikely, as long as there's some likelihood, so Rav Meir says that I'm going to be concerned. This is not the first time in our very own Masechta we talked about Rav Meir being choshesh lemiuta. So here too, Rav Meir's choshesh lemiuta. Now that that's Rav Meir's position, now let's go back to the Chachamim. V'rabbanan delo chayesh lemiuta lo gazra sher mekam asa to osa makam. The Chachamim say to Rav Meir, look, is that the minhag in your community? You say so, we agree with you. Okay, that's fine. Meaning that they make an idol for one day of the year, that's fine. But now let's move to another community where that's not the minhag. And you find it tzelem. Was it worshipped? Unlikely. And so as far as we're concerned, once you say unlikely, so then we follow Rav. Majority of idols are not worshipped. This idol probably was not worshipped. Again, an idol is made very often the time to just honor people. So it's not going to be an Avodah Zarah. And we don't start with your assumption of choshesh lemiuta, and therefore we're not concerned. I'm Rav Yehuda Mashmol, Bandach Shmalachim Shaninu. Rav Yehuda Mashmol says, look, you're finding an idol. You could dismiss it and say, it wasn't meant as a god, as a deity. It was meant only just simply to honor somebody. So Rav Yehuda Mashmol says, that's true, but we're talking about Andarte Shmalachim. So we're talking about an image that was made in the image of a king. So interesting Rashi over here. Rashi writes on Darte, Kishamelch Mesos in Sarasa Bepesach Hashar Lezikaron. Vahazim Kasa Ramer Da'agav Chavivus Pachalei. So Rashi over here, and Rashi is going to do this two times. This Rashi and the very next Rashi. Rashi is going to say that this statement of Rav Yehuda Mashmol is actually within the Shita of Rav Meir. Rashi says here used to be the practice. The practice was, they had a king, they liked him, he died, and so what they did is they made a statue in his image. And then what happens is that they made a statue in his image, and you know what? They liked him so much, they started worshipping the statue. So that is going to be the scenario in which Rav Meir says that once you find such a statue, so then a statue is going to be presumed to be Asur B'Hanah, even though we don't know with any historical knowledge that it was worshipped, but you can assume that it was worshipped. So the way Rashi sets it up is that this statement is going within the Shita of Rabbi Meir. It has to be that the statue is at the entrance of the city. So, and again, I'm just going to go right back to the Rashi. Only in that case, Rav Meir says that it has chashivas, it has significance, and therefore that's something to be concerned about. So the way Rashi is understanding this statement of both Rav Yehuda Mashmol and Rabbi Rabbachan and Rav Yochanan, these are qualifications within Rav Meir. So what it would then do is that if it's not the statue of a king, so then, and all you do is just found the Tzelem and you don't know the history, so then even according to Rav Meir, you could be Mako. That's the way Rashi presents it. It's from the Gemara itself, it's not perfectly clear that this was a qualifier in Rav Meir. Okay, yes. Right. So that's a great question. It's a great question. It is discussed. It's not clear cut. Okay. Amar Rabba. We are in the very top of Mem Alef Amud Alef. Machlokes b'shul kfarim. Avashol krachim devar hakol mutarim. My time of Lanoi Abdullahu. So the Gemara says we're going to make a distinction between villages and cities. All right, Purim's coming up, right? We know in Halacha differences between villages and cities. But in other words, in terms of Avodah Zarah, so Rabbah makes the following distinction. In a village, so we have a machlokes, Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Was the idol made to be worshipped, or was it made just simply as an idol? In other words, to honor somebody. But in the city, however, when you see statues in the city, they are not made for idol worship. People in the city have money. The city has money. And the city is going to make images to honor people, various people, and not as an avodah zarah. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. I hear the distinction, but the Gemara says, but I don't understand how you can be so lenient. You're in a village. They have really limited money. Is there at least even a moment where we could suggest, oh, you know what? Let's pull together all of our limited resources to make some sort of statue to honor people. They don't have money. If they're making a statue, they're making it for one reason, and one reason only, to worship it. So the Gemara says, so therefore, I like the distinction, we just have to modify. Correct. In the city, you find an idol, you don't know the history of it. Okay, machlokes Rameir and the Chachamim, whether it was or wasn't worshipped. But if we're talking about in the kfarim, if we're talking about a village, you see an idol in the village, let me assure you that they made it to worship. They don't have money. They're not going to just simply make these nice little projects of we're going to make this idol to honor such an individual. That's not the case. It was meant for worship. The Chacham Amar Meimeinu Asurim. Okay, now we're discussing the Shita of the Chacham. You find it Salem. So the Chacham's position is, in of itself, you don't assume that it was an idol, it was meant as an idol. It's not going to be Asur Bahana. The only time you do so is when it's holding something in its hand. The Mishnah illustrated three things that it's holding in its hand. The Gemara now is discussing the symbolism of these three things. So we start off with the stick. Now, reading these Gemaras, by the way, is just a little bit tricky, because whenever the Gemara talks about Avodah Zarah, the Gemara is going to always speak euphemistically. Meaning the Gemara never wants to compliment the Avodah Zarah, so it's always going to speak in a manner which is derogatory towards the Avodah Zarah. So just read the words of the Gemara once again. Matl Sherodes Atzmo, it's hitting itself. It's not hitting itself, meaning it's euphemism. It's just simply, that's the way the Gemara speaks when it talks about Avodah Zarah. It just simply means that it is basically hitting the world, or it looks like it represents like it's hitting the world. Tachas kolam kulo kamako, like a stick. So basically the world is under its dominion. The stick is showing basically how it rules over. Tzipor shetofes atzmo tachas kolam kulo. The bird, it holds itself, it grabs itself. Again, this is euphemistic speak when talking about Avodah Zarah, meaning it's basically holding the bird. It has control, like a person has control over the bird. This idol has control over the world. So, tachas kolam kula ketzipor. Kador, now we're talking about holding a sphere. Shetofis asasmo tachas kolam kula kador. It basically is like holding the sphere of the earth in its hand. Yeah. Right? It's a good indication. It is a really good indication that they view the earth being round. Absolutely correct. Tano, the Gemara quotes a braiso sifo aleim. The three things were added to the list of within the sheet of the Chachamim. If the idol is holding any one now of these, we're going to add three more items to this list. So then you have to assume that it was worshipped as an idol, and therefore you find that Selim and Sasur Bahana. And the three things that were added were Sayef Atara Tabas, sword, ring, and sword, a crown, and ring. So saif me kara savar listin ba'ama ulevasov savar shahari gesatz matachas kolam kula. In other words, originally, why wasn't sword added to the list? Because sword just simply meant, you know, we want to honor this robber, this thief. Okay. So it's a strange thing to honor, but that's what they honored. And then what they realized is, oh no, in other words, it's a deity, and the sword is basically showing how it has the world under its control. Atara mikar savar gidile klile ba'amu levasov savar katara lamelech. A wreath, originally they thought that they were some sort of wreath maker. Okay, because it's a great wreath maker. But in other words, but they didn't view it as an idol. But then they realized that once you see the crown on its head, so that is a sign of it being a power. They viewed it as a power. And finally, Tabas Mikar Savar, Ishtamya Ba'ama. So when they saw that with a ring, so they thought, okay, an agent, whatever, just another agent. In other words, an agent schleps around various letters. Sometimes what the agent will do is they'll seal the letter. So I'll put a signet from the ring on the letter, but it's just it's a shliach, it's a postal agent, right? They're honoring this postman. He was fantastic. And then but then they realized no, what this particular idol represented with the ring on its finger is that it's sealing the fate of those people that it's that's serving it. Okay. Rav Shimon Gamliel Amar Tana Afilu Tzura Afilu Kisim. Now, Rav Shimon Gamliel is a little more expansive, basically adopting the opinion of the Chachamim. A Tselem has to be holding something in order for us to assume that it was worshipped as a deity. But what it's holding? So according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, it could be holding anything. And the Gemara just brings a brisa down, even a stone, even a twig. By Rav Ashi, Tafas Biyadot So Amahu, Rav Ashi wonders, to what extreme are we going to take the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel? Let's say it's holding an excrement in its hand. Is that now considered? Is that considered like a deity? Meaning, the way we can understand the symbolism is: do you know what the world is to me? It's as if the idol were speaking. The whole world to me is like tsawa, meaning I am so superior to the rest of the world. Oh, ikadami, or maybe who miu dezil ba'ape kula amakitsawa, or maybe no, that's the way it's viewing itself. It views itself as tsawa, but in other words, it does. It's not represented as an Avodah Zarah. So really, if it's holding so in his hand, we don't really understand the symbolism. Teku, the Gemara therefore leaves this question unresolved within the Shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Okay, so far, first sugya of the third parak of Avodah Zarah, you find the Tselem, you don't know its history. So do you assume now that it was worshipped? And even if it was worshipped, maybe the guy was Mevatalit. So we have a range of Shitas in the Mishnah, three Shitas to be exact. The Tanakhama's position is, Reb Meir's position is that once you find a Tselem, you have to be concerned that it was worshipped. Remember, this is Reb Meir Lishita, so he's Choshesh Lemiyuta. Reb Chachamim say, no, I'll go the other way. Even if you find a Tselem, I assume it was not worshipped. Only when it's holding something specific in its hand, the Mishnah lists three things, the Gemara brings the Braisa, listing another three things, but only when it's holding something in its hand, something specific in its hand, then only then do you have to conclude that this was a worshipped idol. And therefore, Asubana. And then the Shita Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, as long as it's holding something, so then you assumed it was a Avodah Zarah. We now continue with the next Mishnah, mostly Shivrei Tzlamim. Okay, so this next Mishnah takes us to the next step, and that is, I haven't discovered a whole idol, but I discovered what was only now just a piece of an idol, what is called Shivrei Tzlamim. Harei Elu Mutarim, so the Mishnah says, so now, it's going to be Mutar. Now, over here, we have now one more variable to take into consideration. Rashi over here in the Mishnah spells it out. Rashi writes on the Mishnah, divra maskal ha'reilu mutarim. So, taima mefarsh begemar, dechi havu shleimim, safek. Now we have the word lo avdum, but safek avdum, safek lo avdum. Meaning, when the idol was intact, so our question is one singular question. Was it worshipped or was it not worshipped? But now that it's broken, so now I can add one more variable. Why is now this idol broken in pieces? Maybe, we don't know, but maybe the avodas, the guy who was worshipping it, maybe he was mavatalit. Hence he broke into many pieces. So here we basically are asking two questions. One, was it worshipped at all? Two, even if it was worshipped, was it broken into pieces? Rashi describes it as a sfeik sfeika. So now this is a double doubt. So now that's a double doubt, so therefore we could be mutter. Continuing in the Mishnah, matzah tavnis yadu tavnis regel, hare elu asur mimishich hayotz bem neva. If, however, you found an image of an hand or an image of a foot, so they're going to be asur because even just hands or feet are, in fact, worshipped individually, independently. Okay, we'll come back to that in just a moment. Amar Shmuel now, in understanding our Mishnah, afil shivrei avodas kochavim. Now Shmuel takes our Mishnah and really, he runs with it. Meaning, our Mishnah was talking about shivrei tzlamim. Now tzlamim is an idol, but we don't know its history. And as I explained, as I just read the Rashi, so now that I found pieces, I really have two legitimate questions we can ask. One, was it ever worshipped? And two, even if it was, maybe it experienced bittul. But what Shmuel now is doing is, he's going to go, let me go one step further. Let's even say that we know for sure it was worshipped. If you find the pieces of it, the remnants of it, it's okay. It's good. Now, Amar Shmuel filu shirei avodas kochavim, anan tanan shirei tzlamim. So now the Gemara points out, Shmuel, that's a much bigger chiddush. You know the basic rules. If the Mishnah is presenting something, the Mishnah is going to present the largest chiddush. You're telling me that even if we know that it was worship, but we found it in pieces, so therefore it's okay. Why wouldn't the Mishnah take the opportunity to say that Mishnahs are interested in giving us the biggest chiddush? So what Shmuel was saying in his defense is, you know what? No. The Mishnah could be talking about even if I found pieces of Avodah Zarah, meaning I know that it was worship. So why doesn't the Mishnah say that? Why isn't the Mishnah giving us the biggest chiddush? Mishim dekabayin lemitzvah seifa. Because really what the Mishnah wanted to do is set us up for the next point of the Mishnah, which is matzah tavnis yad, tavnis regel, harei elu asur mimishich hayotzei bem nevan. Because the Mishnah wanted to talk about residual tzlamim, pieces of a tzlam, because the Mishnah wanted to set us up for, but if it's a hand, but if it's a foot, so then it's going to be us because they are independently worshipped. So in other words, you're right, meaning Shmuel, this is Shmuel's argument. The Mishnah could, and maybe should have even said, the remnants of Avodah Zarah, meaning where we know it was worship. But the Mishnah rather wanted Tzelem because they wanted the foil, the contrast, between the second half of the Mishnah, what if it's a hand, what if it's a foot? Okay. Let's for a moment try to understand the opinion of Shmuel, because Shmuel really is difficult to understand. Meaning, we now know that it was worshipped. So it is now a Chefza of Avodah Zarah. It was actually worshipped in services of Avodah Zarah. And now what? Now it's broken in pieces. Now, I don't know for a fact that the goy was mevatelit. I could certainly construct such an argument, but I don't know. And now Shmuel says, oh yeah, but you know what? If he finds it in pieces, it's okay. Meaning, okay, so we have Shmuel's position in front of us. Do we understand Shmuel's position? Why would it be okay? It mamish was Avodah Zarah. I don't know the goy was mevatelit. So Tosus over here deals with this question, and Tosus says, basically, here's how we're going to push Shmuel's position together. Okay, we're going to construct, even though we're talking about deconstructed Avodah Zarah, we're now going to construct Shmuel's position. Tosus Divrei Maschal Amar Shmuel, I'm looking in the middle of that Tosfos, it's about six lines down from the beginning of the Tosfos, it's where he starts off with the words V'achi Perusho. It's right after the first word in the line is being Muteris. So Tosus over here now explaining the opinion of Shmuel. V'achi Perusho Demosa de Shmuel. This is how we're going to understand Shmuel's position. V'afil Shivrei Avodas Kochavim Klamar. Lav Davka Shivrei Tzlamim Sharei. Not only if it's just pieces of an idol where I don't know its history. I don't know if it was worshipped. Mishum Sfeik Sfeika De'emar Lo Avdum Intim Tzolamar Avdum Emar Bitlum. As we've already gone over, if it's a Tzelem where I don't know its history, we have a Sfeik Sfeika. Ela Av Shivrei Avodas Kochavim. But even pieces of Avodah Zarah Devale Avdua Mutarin. Even if I know it was worship, but now I find it in pieces, it's mutter. Why? So here now, Tosus puts together what are our possibilities, and why does Shmuel arrive at this conclusion? He writes, "The kevan de iyade bevadish nishtabra meala muteres im kein stam shvarim mutarim derov shvirosel have bito." Most of the time, when it's broken, that means it was mivutal. Therefore, it was nullified. The tveish shchiach shivre ove kochavim. O nishtabra me'alaha, misha shivra Yisrael. Because Tosa says, what are really our options? One, the goy broke it. If the goy broke it, that's bittul. Two, it broke on its own. It broke on, while under the ownership of a guy. It broke on its own under the ownership of a guy. So let me ask you a question, which right now you don't know the answer to, but you will in just a couple minutes from now. If Avodah Zarah breaks on its own, right, meaning it was on the pedestal, it fell, it broke, while under the ownership of a guy, is that going to be now, do we assume that the guy is looking at that and saying, forget about it. dumb idol. A dumb idol can't take care of itself, it's going to take care of me. So, as we're going to learn in the Amud Beis of today's daf, it's Machlokim Shin Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is of the opinion that if an idol while under the ownership of a guy falls and breaks on its own, so then that also is bittul. That's the opinion of Reish Lakish. So, and Tosus over here is assuming that Shmuel follows like the opinion of Reish Lakish. The Gemara doesn't say that, but Tosus says that we're going to assume that. So now, option number one. The guy broke it. Good, that's bittul. Option number two, it broke on its own. Assuming that Shmuel holds like Reish Lakish, that's also bittul. What's your third option? Maybe it was transferred over to a Jew, and now once it's transferred over to a Jew, now we're stuck. But Tosfos says, even though that's, because even if the Jew breaks it, that's not bittul. He can't be mevatel it. And even if the Jew is, and if it breaks on its own, well, under the ownership of a Jew, that's not bittul as well. So that is an option, but Tosfos says, but think about how unlikely that is. The Vade Amre, Ilu Shiver Yisrael Lo Hayim Nichusham, Ela Hayim Evar Legamre Min Olam. Meaning, if a Jew did get ownership of it, and now he has the obligation to destroy it, he's not going to just break it into a couple of large pieces. What he's going to do is he's going to obliterate it. He's going to reduce it down to ashes. So now Tosfos says, all this is assuming, right? Tosfos is making a one leap of assumption that Shmuel holds like Reish Lakish. So now, even if I know that it was actual Avodah Zarah, and now all I find is just pieces of it, so according to Shmuel, it's okay. A, if the guy owned it. So if the guy broke it, that's bittul. B, if the guy owned it and it broke on its own, that too is bittul, assuming Shmuel is like Reish Lakish. And C, if a Jew owned it, so then he wouldn't have just left it in pieces. He would have totally obliterated it. Okay. Says Tosfos, that's the understanding of Shmuel. Back to our Gemara, where the last word of the second to last line. Tanan. Matzah tavnisya, tavnis regal, harei elu asur min shechayotze bo nevan. So now we're looking at a hand or a foot. And the Mishnah tells us that you then have to suspect that it was worshipped. Amai, the Gemara asked the question, why should that be according to Shmuel, the Hashivram Ninu? So according to Shmuel, they're broken pieces. Shmuel, remember, you're the one who said that even if we know that it was worshipped, once it's broken into pieces, it's okay. Over here, we're talking about just the remnant of a hand, the remnant of a foot, an idol. And the Mishnah says, we're worried according to you, Shmuel. Why do I need to be worried? So the Gemara says, Be'omdim al bisisan. So the Gemara says, no. I know that this hand and this foot was worshipped. How do I know that? The way Rashi describes it is that there was a base that was made for the hand or for the foot. Rashi al bisisan al kanan. Right? On the base. Meaning, it's a hand that has a base underneath it. And therefore you're plopping it right on top of the base. And so, therefore, it's not a broken idol. That's the idol. Tosfos has a slightly different understanding, but okay. Itmar. And so now, what we're going to do is we're going to begin the machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Let's begin it this morning. And tomorrow we'll probably conclude. But let's get an introduction. Avodas Kocham Shin Eshabra Me'alah. You have an Avodah Zarah. It was worshipped as an Avodah Zarah. And then, lo and behold, it broke. Again, I say all this while under the ownership of a non-Jew. So, is the non-Jew going to be mevatalit? Rav Yochanan Amar Asura, Rav Yochanan says that until the non-Jew verbally nullifies it, it's still an Avodah Zarah. And Rav Shimon Melakish Amar Muteres. And Rav Shimon Melakish says, no, once it breaks, it's Muter. And the Gemara explains, Rav Yochanan Amar Asura, the Halo Batla. Rav Yochanan says, look, it broke, but he wasn't mevatalit. In other words, if he breaks it himself, that's bittul. But just because the idol in of itself breaks, according to Rav Yochanan, that's not enough. You need an active bittul that's done by its owner. And Rashbal Amar Muteres Mistama Bittulim Mevatalei. And the Reish Lakish Shimon Melakish says, look, if it broke on its own, so then the guy is going to be, in other words, even without us hearing him saying the words, I'm Mevatalit, we can safely assume he's Mevatalit. Look, it can't even save itself. Is that dumb thing now going to save me? So in other words, so the guy will come to his senses once he sees that the Avodah Zarah is broken. So here we have a basic machlokas amaraim, Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. When the idol breaks under the ownership of a goy, does that create default bittul? Reish Lakish says yes. Rav Yochanan says no. The Gemara now goes and proves each side of this argument. Eitz Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. So we start off with a challenge from Rav Yochanan to Reish Lakish, and that is the following. So you remember not that long ago in the daf, we were discussing this parak of Shmuel Aleph. So the Plishtim took the Aron and placed it right alongside their idol. And what happened? Rosh Dagon v'shtei kapos yadav kruzos. And what happens is that they wake up the next morning and they find that their idol Dagon was destroyed, meaning it broke. And uksiv aken lo yidruchu kani Dagon. And from that point going forward, they still honored it and they still respected it. And they wouldn't go over the threshold of where the idol once upon a time was. From the psukim, a simple reading of the psukim, it sounds like they still gave some sort of deified power to the Dagon even after it broke. Simple reading of the psukim. And Rav Yochanan says, you see, I'm right. So Amar lo, so Reish Lakish says back to Rav Yochanan, Misham Raya, Hasum Sheminichim Es HaDagon, Ovdim Es HaMiftan. No, you got the story wrong. Meaning, yes, they were still worshipping, but they weren't worshipping the idol. They were worshipping the threshold. Meaning they assumed that the power went from the idol to the threshold. The power, the source of power, must have transferred from Dagon over to the Miftan. So, but no. In other words, once they saw Dagon was broken, they didn't believe in it anymore. Eisvei. The Gemara challenges, once again, So, let's take a look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, what do you find? Pieces of Avodah Zarah. But our Mishnah, now, I know that we were already introduced to the opinion of Shmuel. Let's do the following all together. Let's forget what Shmuel said. Not supposed to forget what you learned. Okay, let's all forget what Shmuel said. Meaning, let's just look at our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says you find pieces of Tzelem. I don't know its history. So now, how Shivrei Avodas Kochav and Masurim? So now, if I read the Mishnah, a simple deek in the Mishnah would be, if they were pieces of Avodah Zarah that were actually worshipped, it would be Aser. Now, I know Shmuel doesn't agree with that, but again, like I said just a moment ago, forget Shmuel for just a moment. So now, if a simple reading of the Mishnah, a critical reading of the Mishnah would tell us that if there are pieces of Avodah Zarah, they would be Aser. The Mishnah doesn't say that, but the clear deek in the Mishnah is that it would be Aser. So now, Rav Yochanan says, you see, it's beautiful. Beautiful for me. Meaning that even though the Avodah Zarah broke, it's going to be Aser. So lo tema shivrei avodas kochav asurim ela ima hatzlamim asman asurim. So the Gemara says, no, you're going in the wrong direction with the diuk. The diuk is not to tell us to go from broken pieces of avodah zarah broken pieces of an idol to broken pieces of avodah zarah. No, what the Mishnah meant as a diuk is broken pieces of a tzelem to a whole tzelem, and ustamakar Rav Meir. And you know what this Mishnah is doing? This Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah, is really a shout-out to the opinion of Rav Meir. Meaning, go back to the first Mishnah that we did earlier this morning. The first Mishnah tells us that if I have a tzelem in whole, it's not holding anything. Is it? What do we say about its history? Rav Meir says, probably worshipped. Now, when you're learning the second Mishnah is just repeating that point through a diuk. Broken pieces of its tzelem are going to be mutter. The whole tzelem is going to be aser. And the Mishnah is just simply reviewing for us the opinion of Rav Meir. Rav Yochanan, now Rav Yochanan. Selah means we don't know the history. Avodah Kochav means we know that it was worshipped. So by the Selah, we have a Sveik Sveika. By an Avodah Zarah, there is no Sveik Sveika. Okay. Rav Yochanan mid Rav Meir, Nishma Lulu Rabbanan. So then Rav Yochanan will tell you, well, look, once we have Rav Meir's position clear, I think I can guess what the Chachamim's position is. Lav Amar Rav Meir Tzlamim Asurim Shivrei Tzlamim Mutarim. Look, according to Rav Meir, a whole Tzlamim is going to be Aser. Okay? Broken Tzlamim are going to be Mutar. And again, according to Rav Meir, you have now the double Suffolk. Maybe it was worship, maybe it wasn't. And even if it was worship, but now it's broken, so maybe it was Bittul. Fine. Now, according to the Chachamim, so let's now work with the same logical progression. So Larabana Navodis Kochavim, I'm sorry. Amar Ramir Slamim Asurim Shivrit Slamim Mutarim. Larabana Navodis Kochavim Nami. He Asura Vishivram Mutarim. So according to the Chachamim, if it's Mamish Avodah Zarah, meaning, again, Avodah Zarah meaning I know it was worshipped. So that, of course, is going to be Asur. Shivreha, but once it's broken, it would be Mutar. Meaning just follow the progression. For a mayor, a tzela, meaning I don't know its history. Intact, Asur. Broken, Mutar. So for the Chachamim, just move everything up a notch, but work with the same progression. Meaning if it's Avodah Zarah, meaning I know it was worshipped, Asur. Broken pieces of Avodah Zarah, going to be Mutar. Okay. And Reish Lakish will tell you, oh, look, what do you see over here? That once it breaks, by definition, it's Mutar. Okay. Hachi Hashta, the Gemara says, I do not buy that logical flow. Hasa Meimar Avdum, Meimar Lo Avdum, because look, when you're talking about it, Selim, your starting point is, I don't know. That's your starting point. Maybe it was worship, maybe it wasn't worship. Vimtim Salam Avdum, Meimar Batlum, Avodas Kochavim. I'm sorry, Meimar Batlum. And now that it's broken, so now, look, maybe it was worship, maybe it wasn't. It's broken now, maybe it was Mevutal. Once again, Sfeik Sfeika. But Avodas Kochavim, but if you're starting off with something which was for sure an Avodah Zarah, Vaday Avdua, you know for sure it was worshipped. So your starting point is, it's Mamish Asr. Asr Baranar. Miyem Debala, Have Safek, Uvaday. Vein Safek Mosim Midei Vaday. So now, what are we looking at? What are we looking at over here? We start off with something which is Bevadai Asr. And now I'm only going to ask a question. Maybe he was Mevatalit. Maybe he wasn't. I can't go from something which is Vaday Asr. And just because of a possibility, I'm now going to say that the Isr is now going to be Mutter? That can't be. So in other words, so basically what we have over here now is the following. Our Mishnah talks about, we have two, so far in today's daf, we went over two Mishnayos of the third paragraph of Avodah Zarah. The first Mishnah is where you encounter at Selim, an entire idol, where I don't know its history. Was it worshipped? Was it not worshipped? If it was, it's Asr Bana. If it's not worshipped, it's just an idol. That's all it is. So is it Asr Bana, yes or no? So in the first mission, we have a machlokes between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, yes, it was an Avodah Zarah. We will assume it's an Avodah Zarah. Again, Rabbi Meir's choshish lemiyuta, so therefore he's assuming it's Avodah Zarah. And the Chachamim say, no, we don't assume such a thing. If it was mamash an Avodah Zarah itself, obviously, it's Asr Bana. Next Mishnah is Shivrei Slamim. Shivrei Slamim of the Mishnah, Mem Aleph, Mem Aleph. So there, the Mishnah says that would be Mutter. The simplest way to explain the Mishnah, as Rashi does, is that it's a Sfeik Sfeika. Where do we go from there? So interesting, we go in a number of different possibilities. One is the opinion of Shmuel. Shmuel says that even if I have Shivrei Avodah Zarah, it's going to be Mutter. Why didn't the Mishnah say that? As Shmuel explained. But in other words, even if it's Shivrei Avodah Zarah, it's going to be Mutter. Because, like we saw in Tosfos, basically, by process of elimination, we're fine. Either it was owned by a guy, and he broke it, it was owned by a goy and it was broken, and again, Shmuel holds like Reish Lakish, or a Jew owned it, but if a Jew owned it, he wouldn't just break it into these large pieces. He would have pulverized it. Then, we also saw the opinion of either Rav Yochanan or Reish Lakish, in terms of how to understand the Mishnah. They don't understand the Mishnah is talking about Shivrei Avodah Zarah, the Mishnah is talking mamish about Shivrei Tzlamim. So according to Reish Lakish, very good. Shivrei Tzlamim, broken pieces of its Tzlamim, meaning even if it was worshipped, the fact that it broke, that by definition now, is mevatal. Why? Because according to Reish Lakish, once an Avodah Zarah breaks, it's now mevutal. Meaning, even if the guy didn't break it himself. And again, the argument for Reish Lakish is, if it can't save itself, there's no way it's going to save me. The sheet of Rav Yochanan is no. Only when the guy actively breaks it is it going to be mevutal. Why would the Mishnah then say that Shivrei Tzlamim would be mutter? How do I know that the guy actively broke it? I don't. But in other words, again, you go back to the Sfeik Sfeika. Look, I don't know its history to begin with. It may or may not have been worshipped. On top of that, the goy may or may not have broken it. But that's what's called the Sfeik Sfeika, and therefore it's going to be Mutter. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up.